Hi, everyone. Today's reading is taken from the book of Titus, chapter 2, verses 11 to 14. The grace of God that brings salvation has appeared to all men. It teaches us to say no to ungodliness and unworldly passions, and to live self-controlled, upright, and godly lives in this present age, while we wait for the blessed hope, the glorious appearing of our great God and Savior, Jesus Christ, who gave himself for us to redeem us from all wickedness and to purify for himself a people that are his own very own, eager to do what is good.
Morning. Wow. Oh, this is a great day to be baptized, huh? Yeah. I was worried it was going to rain and be cold, but thankfully that didn't happen. So. Oh, yes. Yeah. Peter actually wanted to be baptized inside in a nice, warm baptismal tank, but unfortunately, that didn't work out. So now he's going to be dunked in the ocean, so that's really good. That's really exciting, actually. I mean, that's like going really biblical there. Yeah, that's... Oh, sorry. Whoever's the... Yeah, sorry. Yeah. Yes. Okay, so this is actually my first baptism ever. I've never done a baptism. I've been involved in people getting baptized, but I was never the one baptizing. So that's pretty cool. So I'm very excited about that. But what's even cooler is that someone is getting baptized, and that's Peter. And you're going to hear his testimony a bit later, and we're going to have a little bit more of that. But first, I just want to give a little bit of, you know, what's Peter getting himself into? You know, what is this gospel? What is this Christian church? What is that? You know what's very interesting is that when you have kids, they make you realize something. They make you realize that you're not very impressed with the world. Our kids are. You know, our kids are impressed. Like, Rosanna's always like, oh my goodness, a tree! Daddy, you know, I'm having this conversation with Charlotte. It's important. It's about, I don't know, budget stuff or whatever. No, we're having this intense conversation. And then Roselle will just be like, grass, daddy. And she won't stop until I acknowledge, yes, there's grass there. Like everywhere else on planet Earth. But, you know, right? And it takes kids often to make you realize this. We see a tree or a blade of grass or ourselves in the mirror, and we're not very impressed, right? We've seen it all before. And the older you get, the more boring and normal the world seems. It's just commonsensical. It's boring. But have you ever had those moments, you know, once in a while, or have you ever had these moments where all of a sudden you kind of just wake up, and it's not normal at all? You wake up to how utterly odd it is that there is something rather than nothing. There's something. Has that ever happened to you? Feeling alone up here. Is that ever, right? You know, you just, wow. You know, you wake up and it's bizarre, this world. We're real. I'm up here talking to you and you're down there listening to me. And it's just, we take it for granted, but it's really, really bizarre, right? We exist. And does it ever strike you as strange? You know, every once in a while, I'm walking along, and all of a sudden, I realize I'm a brain encased in a head. You know, I'm inside of a skull, and I'm walking along. That's me. That's who we really are. We are all trapped in skulls. And we're peeping out at one another through these little beady eyes. And the light's coming in, and our whole entire sense of reality is the result of billions of neurons popping in our brain with the trillions of synaptic connections, and the particular way that they fire is what gives us our sense of self. Really, you only know I'm up here talking to you because the light waves are going into your beady little eyes, and the sound waves are going into your ears, and it is causing the neurons in your brain to act in a certain way that you are interpreting as me being out here talking to you. And it's very strange, very bizarre, and really quite beautiful. It's mind-boggling when you think about it. But we're just used to it. It's normal. There's a person. You know, we just take it for granted. It's ordinary. It's normal. And once in a while, though, you wake up and see how strange the world is. We exist. It's real. It's really here. And we don't even know what existence is. What is existence? What is it that sustains us over nothingness? Why is there something rather than nothing? Well, we say, well, we have matter. You know, we have substance. I have substance. Here I am. But what is substance? We don't even know what substance is. We're just used to it. But we stop asking the question. But if you can step out of your grid of normality and look at it with fresh eyes, you realize it is quite a strange thing. We used to think that if we could just get down to the smallest particles that comprise matter, that we would understand it, that we would understand everything. If we could just go down to the smallest unit, which we thought would be this little indivisible thing called the atom. And so we finally got down to the atom, and guess what? We discovered that it's not an indivisible tiny thing at all. Actually, an atom is a universe unto itself. And there are all these subatomic particles that comprise the atom. And we keep learning more and more and more about it. Things that comprise all matter. And these subatomic molecules are just really bursts of energy. And there are all sorts of kinds of them because there's all sorts of kinds of bursts of energy. And they interact with one another in different ways. So you got quarks and hadrons and bosons and leptons and all these other kind of particles. But they're all momentarily poppings of energy, little bursts, and they last for a fraction of a second. And then everything is composed of that. Little poppings. And we don't even know what energy is. What is energy? Well, it interacts with our measuring devices in certain ways. It registers in certain ways on some particular measuring devices that we have. But we don't know what it is. We can say what it does, we can measure it, we can slap a name on it, but what is it? So everything is composed like this. So I'm up here talking to you, and I look and sound normal, and that I look solid, and you think I'm solid. But really, I'm just a massive conglomeration of trillions of poppings every nanosecond. I'm popping up here. Yes. All these energy bursts, and that's what I am. I feel like Pixel Man. It's like when you're watching television, it looks like you're watching a solid person, but actually you're watching is just millions of pixels that are popping in certain colors in certain ways that give the illusion that there is something solid, but really it's just the poppings of the pixels. And I feel just like a pixel man, but instead of pixels, I have subatomic particles, and they're popping. And the particular way my poppings are organized is what makes me me, and the particular way that your poppings are organized is what makes you you, and a chair, and the building a building. And so it is for everything that we know of. And the thing that keeps it all organized, we're told, is that everything is held together by forces or dark energy or comprised of a hierarchy of energy fields. I don't know. It's all complicated to me. And we don't really know. And from the atom to the plant to the person to the earth to the solar system to the galaxy to the universe, it's all subatomic particles popping trillions of times a second, held together by forces or energy fields or who knows what, keeping us solid. Really sure what these things are, other than the fact that they're holding the poppings together. And we can measure them with our instruments. We can predict where they might be, but we have no idea what anything is. And that's what comprises all of reality. It's bizarre. It's weird. It's fascinating. And we are swimming in a sea of mystery, of unfathomable, impenetrable mystery. Every square centimeter around us, every second, is absolutely an impenetrable, can't say the word, mystery. And it's beautiful, and it's bizarre. But see, we get tired. We get so tired. And we just look at the world as though it's common, ordinary, commonsensical. And what we call ordinary is simply the label we slap on this infinite sea of mystery when you're half awake. We go through life sort of half asleep, and we don't notice the mystery of it all. And the more we see and learn of reality, the weirder it gets. It's very, very odd. But we're so tired. You know, what is time? What is time? I mean, that is a fascinating topic. You want to read something that'll blow up your brain, like almost literally? Just read The Philosophy of Time. What is it? You know, was there a first moment or not? You know, was there a first moment? Because it's weird, because if there was a first moment, you can always think, well, what about the moment right before the first moment? So you can't have a first moment. But then again, if there was never a first moment, you can never get to this point in time, because there would be an infinite past of moments, and you would never reach this time. So was there a first moment, or was there not a first moment? It can't be either, but it has to be one of them. It's so bizarre. Right? You know, or is there a boundary to space? Have you ever thought about this? I've thought about this since I was, like, in kindergarten. Is there a boundary to space? Like, you can't conceive of space having a boundary, right? I mean, it just seems, well, I mean, can there be a wall to space? But then again, does space go on for infinity? Well, no, it doesn't seem. Like, so is there a boundary or is there not a boundary? Well, I don't know. It's amazing. It's bizarre. It just, you can't fathom it. It's a weird, weird, bizarre, amazing, phenomenal world we are living in. But we take it for granted and act like everything is normal. You've fallen asleep at the wheel. You're just going through life, and thus, when you hear the beautiful, amazing wonder of the gospel, it just passes you by. You've been conditioned, especially here in the West, to ignore it, to think it crazy, to think it dumb, to think it ruined by hypocritical followers, to think it's ruined by people using it for bad. But in reality, it is something so amazing, so precious, so extraordinary that your mind would be blown if you truly understood the implications. It's like the native and the buffalo. Anyone here take psychology? Or took psychology? No one goes into psychology when you're Chinese, right? Doctors and engineers. Anyways, maybe you don't find the gospel attractive, though, because of the environment you have been in, like in the West. So in Lionel Nicholas's introduction to psychology, you know, he's really helpful in this because he recounts the findings of an anthropologist named Turnbull that illustrates the extent to which our perception is shaped by culture and environment. Turnbull stated that he was accompanied by a pygmy guide who had spent his entire life in the dense jungle, never entering the plains in any manner. They guide onto the open plains and they observe a buffalo, which the pygmy had only ever seen at a maximum distance of 30 meters in the jungle. But when the pygmy was shown the buffalo on the plain for the first time ever, he asked what kind of insect it was. And when told it was not an insect, but rather a buffalo, he stated that it could not be a buffalo as it was too small. And this striking event taught Turnbull something of the extent to which perception is shaped by culture and reality. Not just our ideas, but even the way we actually see things, even the questions we ask when we do science. Everything is shaped by our culture, by everything. So a person raised in a dense jungle will perceive particular sensory stimuli as a nearby insect, while somebody raised on the plain will interpret the same stimuli as a distant buffalo. But wait, am I saying that one man's insect is another man's buffalo? Well, not quite. In this case, one description is clearly correct and the other is false. It really was a buffalo. But this story shows that our perceptual judgments are not free of context. All of our experience of the world is deeply formed by culture and experience. That's why you find the world so boring, when it's actually absolutely amazing and bizarre. And then when it comes to the gospel, maybe you're here, maybe you've been conditioned by our Hollywood, our culture, our, you know, friends, bad experiences, what have you. You've been conditioned to ignore the gospel, to think it's crazy, to think it dumb, to think it ruined by its hypocritical followers, to think it ruined by people using it for bad. But in reality, like I said before, it is something so amazing, so precious, so extraordinary that your mind would be blown if you truly understood its implications. And, you know, and maybe you don't find the gospel attractive because you don't realize how beautiful it really is. And so I just want to take one little snapshot, one little quick snapshot of the gospel in action. And that's in John chapter 4, the Samaritan woman. So if you have a Bible, chapter 4, page 753 if you have our church Bibles. And so this is a very famous story, especially if you've grown up in the church. It's Jesus talks with the Samaritan woman. The Samaritan woman. So what's interesting here, so you have this passage. So Jesus, he's going. Now he had to go through Samaria. Now, this is interesting. Right here in verse 4, chapter 4, verse 4 says, now he had to go through Samaria. If you know geography, but you don't know context, this you might not read this right. Why would he have to go through Samaria? Well, if you know geography, you would know, well, there's Judah in the bottom, or Judea in the bottom, you got Galilee in the north, and in between them was Samaria. But the thing was, is no one had to go through Samaria, because you could just go around Samaria. Now, why would you go around Samaria? Well, the Samaritans were kind of viewed as garbage. You know, they were hated. They were despised. The Jews hated the Samaritans because the Samaritans, in their opinion, were considered half-breeds, crossbreeds. Because what had happened was, is way back in the day, there's, you know, have you ever heard of the 10 lost tribes of Israel? Has anyone ever heard of that phrase? That popular phrase here? Anyway. So you got, remember when the Jews used to be called Hebrews? Ever wonder why they're now called Jews and not Hebrews? Well, because at some point, the Israel split into two. You had Israel in the north, Judah in the south. And what happened was you had this big empire called Assyria. They were evil. They were like the epitome of the worst kind of people you want to be around. The Assyrians came. They conquered Israel. And this was genius. This is pure genius. If you ever become like a maniacal dictator, do this. It's genius. What he did was, what the leader of the Assyria did, is he would take people from one area and he would transport them and put them into another area. And then the people from that other areas, he would transport them into the new areas. So there was never this national identity. And if there's no national identity, you don't have to worry about the people revolting because you don't trust any of your neighbors because they're this guy and that guy and the other thing, right? So this is what Assyria did to Israel. All these people go away, but not everyone. I mean, there were still some Israelites there. And what happened is you had these people and these Israelites, and they all kind of got together. You know, you got to get married to something, right? So they got married, had kids, and these were these kind of half-breeds from the Jew. That's how the Jews would have referred to them, half-breeds. I remember when I was in the Korean church and I was doing research on Korean culture and things like this, and this was one survey. I'm not saying all Koreans are like this. This was just one survey I was doing in my research. But it was interesting. They asked young kids with what they would feel like if they were half and half, if they were half white and half Korean. And over 50% of Korean youth asked this question, said, I would rather be dead. Okay, scientific survey, but I don't know. Anyway, take that for, I don't know if it's still like that, but it was just an interesting insight. And that's kind of the mindset was because you would get made fun of and you look different and Korea's very homogenous. And anyway, all these reasons. But the Jews, they hated the Samaritans because they were viewed as these half-breeds. And to give you an idea, they would be like, Lord God, I thank you for salvation. I thank you for not making me a Samaritan. And oh, by the way, don't give them salvation. Right? Can you imagine that? Can you imagine praying that God would not save other people because you just hate them that much? Right? So these are the Samaritans. They're not liked. They're hated. And so what Jews would often do, oh, and by the way, the reason why I went from Hebrews to Jews is because all those tribes went away and all that was left was Judah. So then Jews. Anyway, history lesson. So what would happen is the Jews, if they wanted to go to Galilee, they would just bypass Samaria because they didn't want to. You just don't want to be around those people, right? You know, you ever have that feeling where there's people you just don't want to be around because they're icky and gross or what have you? Well, that's what they viewed about all the Samaritans, which is why Jesus always uses them as positive examples in his messages, and that's why he's awesome. One reason. Anyway, so Jesus says, now the text says, now he had to go through Samaria, right? He didn't have to go through Samaria unless he had a purpose. He had a reason because he had a date, right? He had a date with a girl, with a woman, a Samaritan woman. So he goes, that's a metaphor. So he goes to this well, and his disciples go to get some food, and he goes to this well. And what's interesting is it mentions the time, right? It says, now he had to go through Samaria, blah, 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 blah. And then it says it was about the sixth hour. It was noon. It was noon. He came to the well at noon, and there was just this woman. Woman. Now, why? Does anyone know why this would be interesting? Why is it interesting that it's noon? Why would they put that in the text? It's tough for us to know because we just turn on a tap, and hey, there's water. Yay. Right? But, you know, you need water before noon. right? Most people would go to the well in the morning or in the evening, possibly, but you wouldn't go at noon when the sun is blazing and it's hot and it sucks and you're drinking, you need to be drinking water already, right? It's noon and there's this lone woman. You know, the water supply of the town, there's only one person. Why? Because this woman didn't want to be around other people. Because this woman, not only would she have been viewed by garbage for being a Samaritan because by a Jew, but she was kind of viewed kind of poorly by Samaritans. Because, as we learn later in the story, she had had five husbands, and she was now living with another man who wasn't her husband. Right, so she doesn't want to go to the watering hole where everyone's going to be looking at her. She goes at noon, and there's Jesus. And she's talking, and he asks her to pour him some water. This is amazing. This is amazing because normally men weren't allowed to talk to women in private like that. Right? Even in today's, in certain Arab countries, you can't do that. I can't be a man by myself with a woman who isn't my wife. That's crazy. That's ridiculous. Why would you do that? That's horrible. You know, what could happen? Blah, blah, blah. So here he is. He's talking to this woman. He already has broken a million different rules of his culture. I mean, I don't know how to translate this, but it would be like, you know, you're walking down the street at some point, and you see me, the pastor, you see the pastor, and you see me walk into a brothel, not my house, but an actual brothel, and you see me walk into a brothel, and then you see me talking to a prostitute, and maybe you even see me give her money or something. You know what you'd be thinking? You'd be like, oh, and you'd be calling people, and you'd be like, Marty, what did you do? You brought this guy, right? You know, you guys would freak out, right? It wouldn't matter if I'm having this innocent conversation and this girl's actually my cousin and I'm giving her money to pay, help her pay her rent. It wouldn't, you would just, your mind would be blown. And this is what's going on. Jesus is going, and he doesn't care about that. He just breaks the boundary. He breaks the boundary because the gospel is for all, right? It doesn't matter what you've done or who you are. It is for all. And so he's talking to this woman, and they start getting into this conversation about water. And she's like, you know, and he's like, I can give you living water. And she's like, you don't even have a cup. You asked me for the water. Why are you? How can you give me water? And they're having this interesting, fascinating conversation. He tells her her life without her telling it, and it just blows her mind. And what does she do? She goes and she starts screaming out to the town. And later she says, she goes into the town. She's telling people, and many of the Samaritans from that town believed in him because of the woman's testimony. And she said, he told me everything I did. And what's amazing is he told her everything she did. He knew about this. He knew about this woman. He had this date planned. We know that from verse 4 when it says he had to go through Samaria. In mind, he knew this woman was here. Even with all the boundaries, he broke them all. He didn't care because he loved this woman. It boggles my mind about how, and it was this attitude. It was this, him hanging out with prostitutes, with tax collectors, with Samaritans, with drunkards, with all these people. This was one of the reasons why he was hated. Because he hung out with the people no one else wanted to hang out with. People today. We have those people in our own society, right? We have maybe homeless people. Maybe we have pedophiles. You know, no one likes them. They may be criminals, murderers. These are, I mean, people, I mean, it's not like we don't have a reason to hate them. It's not that there's no, it's not like we just hate them for no reason. But the beauty of Jesus' gospel is that the gospel is for everyone. That salvation, that this life isn't the only life, and that this life can be transformed into a beautiful world, and that there's a world to come. You know, the thing that wowed people about the Christians in the earliest days, you know, there wasn't healthcare, there wasn't any of this social network that helps protect society like we have here in New Zealand. You know, the Christians, they'd be the ones who helped the people with the plague, and then they would get the plague, and then they would die with the plague. Right? They would be the ones who helped the people. They were the ones who fought against infanticide. Right? That's why that disappeared for a while. It's back, kind of coming back now. But they're the ones who pushed against infanticide. They're the ones who fought for the defenseless in society. They were the ones who who just basically radically transformed the Roman Empire. It's interesting. People say that, you know, Constantine became emperor and then he made everyone Christian. And that's sort of true. The problem was is that half of the empire was already Christian just by normal acts of kindness and love. That all started with Jesus. And this is just a little picture. There's so much more that could be said. But Peter's here, and Peter has gotten a taste of this gospel, has gotten a taste of the beauty of the gospel, has seen the majesty that is contained in the person of Jesus Christ. And as soon as you just get a glimpse, a glimmer, a glance of the Jesus in Scripture, you can't help but be enamored and want to be baptized and want to enter into the church and want to enter into this world to make it a better place. And so it's just really awesome that Peter is getting baptized today, and now I'm going to call him up to give his testimony of how this glimmer of Christ has transformed his life.
Hi. Quite scary actually being up here, like you're seeing around. Anyway, okay, thanks.